My name is Stella Romano. I was listening to the Patrick DeGidge Show.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
How sweet it is. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. I know if you're a regular on this program, you already have that number on speed dial, chances are. But if you're new to the program, that's the number to call to be on the air. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Lines available right now. This note comes in from Lisa listening in Green Bay. Thank you for writing to me, Lisa. This came in overnight. Patrick, she says, I have been listening to you for years, and I have really grown in my knowledge and faith listening to all the different shows on Relevant Radio. Well, that's wonderful. We're all happy about that. Thank you. She refers to a recent show in which she says, you talked about how parents should not blame themselves so much because their children have left the church. Well, yes. My husband and I have two wonderful married boys, 32 and 34, and yes, indeed, we are one of those parents. I think technically you're two of those parents, but I get what you're saying. We brought them up faithfully. We prayed together. We went to Mass, even on vacation. We taught religious ed classes. I had many good dinner discussions about the faith. They are definitely part of the culture and we have around us. They're definitely part of the culture we have around us today. It has taken many years for me to stop blaming myself. I pray to St. Monica and still talk to them, their sons, about our faith. They see how we live our lives, and we hope and pray they will return. But when I heard you talk about this, it brought me more peace of mind. Thank you. And thank you, Lisa. Sure appreciate you taking a moment from your no doubt busy day to share those sentiments with me. I have a feeling that you probably speak for many parents, Lisa, who share the same burden of perceived guilt. Not that you are guilty necessarily, and I don't think you are guilty of doing anything wrong. You did the best you could, as I was talking about the other day. You and your husband, you taught your children about Jesus. You taught them to love the Lord. You probably bought them a Bible when they were little, and all the other good things that you did. And as you look back on it, as I was talking about the other day, you probably wonder, well, where did I go wrong? What did I do wrong? How did they wind up so disinterested in God when we did everything humanly possible to try to keep them plugged into their faith? Well, to reprise what I had said about this the other day, it's something different and unique than any other generation in human history, and that is the internet. Now, the internet, it's not the sole culprit, because even before the internet, well before the internet, there were major upheavals in society. You may be old enough, not you, Lisa, I don't mean you personally, but just you rhetorically may be old enough to remember, and I have a child's memory, being born in 1960, I remember the 60s the way a child would remember anything. So hazy and, you know, somewhat fragmented, but being a student of history and talking to my parents and other people of their generation, as I understand it, it was an incredible upheaval. And society was changing in dramatic ways, politically, sociologically, the rise of modern media, the rise of the sexual revolution, the drug revolution. It was a very chaotic time. And my theory goes something like this. My parents, they're the ones who were children during World War II. They grew up at a time where society in this country had plenty of problems. There were any number of serious problems that maybe some of which we don't have to deal with anymore. Okay, but it had its own set of problems at the time. It wasn't this glorious golden age where everything was perfect, but in some respects, it was way better than it is now. And one of those things was there was a social cohesion in this country where everybody, and think of it this way, imagine if everybody in the country listen to the same radio programs. Maybe there were like two or three or four, you know, that you might tune into. And your parents had listened to Fibber McGee and Molly and some of the other national radio programs. And there was a built-in cohesion because as a people, as you know, the United States of America, people tended to see and hear the same things. There was a homogeneity about this country. And there are upsides and downsides when it comes to that. But there was a kind of social cohesion that blew apart in the 1960s with the rise of mass media. Now, I'm not complaining about mass media. I think in many respects we could benefit from it, but it altered the way in which people reacted to each other and reacted to society around them. We were in the Cold War at that time. So we had just won World War II 15 years earlier, 10 years earlier, and now we're in this protracted Cold War with the Soviet Union and all of those problems. There were assassinations, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King. We had the outbreak of riots in cities all around the country. There was a lot of confusion. And in the middle of all of that, don't forget, there was a little something called Vatican II. Right in the middle of all of this stuff that was going on, Pope John the 23rd had decided in, 1960, he announced that there would be a second Vatican Council that would meet to discuss the role of the church in the modern world and the message that the church would give to the modern world. How do we preach the gospel of Jesus in a world that is very different than it was, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago? And that, too, was an earthquake. Vatican II was a major upheaval, and it destabilized the faith of many people. And if you want to read books about it that are contemporary to that time, I would suggest read, for example, the book by Father Ralph Wiltkin. The book is called The Rhine Flows into the Tiber. And that's a play on words because the Rhine River going through Germany is symbolic of the sort of modernist, leftist, liberal, if we can use those terms, ideology that were brought into the council. And so the Tiber River, that refers to Rome. And so this idea of the Rhine flows into the Tiber is a way of describing how that ideology in its various forms made its way into the deliberations of the Second Vatican Council. And it was written by a priest who was a journalist, and he, an American, and he was there in his capacity as a journalist, and he was chronicling what was happening. He didn't have an axe to grind. He wasn't trying to complain or point fingers. He was just saying, here's what happened. On this day, they did this, they talked about this, etc. So it's a very interesting and well-written account from a contemporary eyewitness who was at the council. Father Yves Congar, who's perceived by many to be sort of on the left side of things, he too wrote a diary of the council. And you see it from a totally different vantage point when you read his account of the council. He was frustrated, by the way, that some of the more traditional things were being retained, and he didn't like some of those things. So in any case, there are contemporary accounts that you can read if you're interested in knowing what happened at that time. But right in the middle of all these other upheavals, you've got that upheaval. So back to your email here, Lisa, what I'm driving at is simply this. When that took place, there were so many factors at work that prevented people like my generation from receiving the gospel in a way like my parents had received it and their parents had received it. Things had become chaotic and unstable, and people were disoriented in many ways. And my parents couldn't hand down the faith to my generation the way they had received it. And for this reason, here's my theory. It's called osmosis. And remember when you were in school and you would do that simple little fun experiment where you would take a Dixie cup full of water and you'd put food dye into it, food coloring, put in purple, green, whatever. Put a piece of celery in that. You come back the next day, wow, look, the celery has turned green. It's already green. The celery has turned blue. The celery has turned red, whatever food coloring you had used, because it absorbed it. It was osmosis. It absorbed it into itself. And my distinct impression is that for those earlier generations who did not live in a hazy, wonderful golden age, but in some ways it was better than it is now, they absorbed the faith into themselves because there was no such thing as, let's go to a different parish where they celebrate the Mass better. Or let's go to a different parish where there are no gimmicks and felt banners and goofy guitar music, where there was maybe a parish where it was much more robust doctrinally and had better preaching, perhaps. And, you know, there's better preaching no matter where you go in time. You'll find better or worse. But you didn't have to worry about quality control in those days. You could go to one parish, you could go to the other parish, you can go to an entirely different parish, and you're going to get more or less the same Catholic faith, the same gospel of Jesus Christ presented to you in one parish versus another. Maybe the priest might be a little more charismatic. Personally speaking, I'm not talking about speaking in tongues. He might be a little more friendly, might be a better preacher, might be less so, but it was more or less uniform. And that permitted osmosis. I think it's a very simple reality that our earlier generations, for the most part, could absorb the faith because things were not chaotic and unstable. Now, my generation grew up in the time when it was chaotic and very unstable, so it was difficult for my generation to absorb the faith through osmosis the way my parents' generation and their parents' generation did, et cetera, et cetera. So think about this now. If you're younger than me, let's say that you're my children's generation. No shame in that. My oldest son is 41. So my generation growing up with lacking many of these mainstays, many of these support structures and things that helped you learn the faith by osmosis. It didn't mean that's the only way you learned it, but it would seep into your very being. You would be Catholic in a very thorough way. Well, if my generation didn't really receive that, what makes anyone think that we would be able to do a good job of passing it down to our children's generation? And now, my grandchildren, who are all entering into teenagehood and young adulthood, it's a process of diminishing returns, if you ask me. So if this generation didn't have it all that well down, and many in my generation fell away from the church, well, how are you going to expect that we're going to do a great job to hand it on to the next generation, and then more and more and more, as you can see what's happening? So that's a part of this bigger problem. But compound that now by putting in the internet, where you've got suddenly now this incredible reality of information that it's just there. It's like a brain. It's like having a gigantic brain at your disposal that you could just tap into at any moment. Cyrus, am I the only one here who is astonished at some of the things I could find on the internet? If I'm looking for some ridiculously arcane, obscure factoid that probably nobody ever thought to sit down and put on a website, and it's there. All I have to do is Google it, and you find it. Isn't that incredible?
It is incredible, and it's also sad that we have all of the greatest minds of all time available in our pocket, but we're looking at, silly.
Are you talking about the Patrick Madrid show on the Relevant Radio app?
That's good.
That's what you
meant.
That's
exactly what I was talking about. Yeah, that's. I like how you see that.
Or did you mean Shakespeare and all of those guys with all that genius baggage?
We have philosophers and every book ever
written. The Bible?
Every single book ever written is available to us on our phones. But we're watching, the equivalent of Beavis and Butthead.
They're watching TikTok videos.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And 10-second increments of nonsense.
Yeah. It is true. And, I think you could vouch for it as much as any other parent. And that is, look at what your kids are up against right now. The competition for their attention through the apps and the YouTube videos and all the other ways in which people's attention spans have been sliced and diced into such tiny fragments. And people now, it seems, especially the younger people, and I'm not indicting younger people, I'm just saying I feel for them because they're up against this juggernaut of receiving information in tiny little bite-sized pieces that I fear that many people can no longer absorb like real content that isn't just mush. It's not just given to them, served up in tiny little bits. So the things like reading a book, for example, sitting down and reading a book, it's becoming a lost art, it seems to me. Maybe another symptom of what we're talking about. You see, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm aware that you see these kinds of challenges in the lives of your children.
I certainly do, and the art of reading a book is a pastime now. It's gone. I can't force my kids to read a book. They're just like, I'm just not a reader. I'm like, what do you mean you're not a reader?
Because you don't read.
Because you don't read, right. And they have no interest in it. And I'm just like, what? Think of all of the great stories they're missing out on, because you don't get any of this through television.
That's true.
A good book can change your can change your heart and mind and take you down a very good path, whereas a TV show is something you forget about. And they're not even watching TV shows. They're watching 10-second TikToks, right, which are absolutely meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I second that motion entirely. And I saw it when, so as you know, and Nancy and I, we have a big family, 11 kids. There's almost an exact line of demarcation right down the middle between the older kids and the younger kids in terms of the way they look at the world on the basis of to what extent were they affected by the internet. The oldest five or six were not affected by the internet as kids because it didn't really exist. Or it existed, but they didn't have any access to it. They didn't have any way to really be in that world. But the younger five or so, they did. And it shows. And you can see a marked difference between the older set of kids and the younger set of kids. And I don't mean that the younger set is bad or anything like that. They're all wonderful kids. But you can see that they're much more comfortable and interested in and tuned into a lot of those pop culture things that are empty calories, if you ask me, than those who are older.
Well, do you think your parents would have said the same thing about television and your generation and how?
I remember. That's a good question. I remember there being an uproar. I didn't pay much attention to it, but I remember the older people, like my grandparents' generation, the ones who were born, you know, like my grandparents were born like during the time of World War I. I remember that generation complaining about the boob tube and that kids are just sitting in front of the TV and they're absorbing all this information passively and it's dumbing them down. And I do remember that. And yeah, so I think to answer your question, yeah, they did have that view. But this is all like 20th century technological explosion stuff. Prior to that, I don't know whether or not one generation, the older generation, looked at the next generation's music or social habits as being any different really than their own. I don't think that Mozart's music was considered, you know, acid rock in the day. So
that's funny. Yeah. It's crazy. So everything keeps changing and like these things circle around, but each new generation seems to be worse than the one before it, or the things that are drawing our attention are a lower base and they're evil, for a lack of a better word. So what's next? If this is going to keep going in this progression, what's next?
Which I think it is. If I could tweak what you just said, Cyrus, and maybe we agree on this, but I wouldn't say that any generation itself is evil, but they're up against more evil.
That's what I meant. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant. So your kids, my grandkids' generation, they're up against something bigger and more formidable and more powerful than anything I grew up with. And, I mean, there was nothing electronic in the 1960s or 70s. You bought your music on vinyl, or you heard it on the radio, or you went to a concert, and that's it. The Walkman, when that came out, the dumb little box that you put a cassette tape in, it was like going to the moon. It was so different, so advanced. And of course, that's like horse and buggy now by comparison to what we have today. So back to Lisa, and thanks for your insight, Cyrus. Lisa, I'm with you 100%, and I'm glad to hear that my commentary earlier gave you more peace of mind. And this is all sort of a colloquy to just say, you did the best you could, as parents do, and it's not your fault that you're dealing with the internet, the era of the internet and the era of apps. We have to live in this world, but there are ways to do that. And this is one reason, I guess I'll cap it off with this thought. This is one reason why Relevant Radio is such a good antidote for that. Because people can listen, your kids can listen, and maybe that's going to be part of the solution to help bring your sons home back to the Lord, back to a practice of their faith, would be to coax them to start listening to Relevant Radio. And one way to do that, this is just a thought, on our YouTube channel, the Patrick Madrid Show has a YouTube channel, we have all of our, many, let's say, topics that are from the show that are self-contained in bite-sized video, audio things. And you can go topically and find some things that you think they might be interested in and then text it to their phone, because they're on their phones anyway. Everybody's on his phone. So text the link to the video to the person's phone. You know he's going to tap it. You know he's going to watch it. And it's only a few minutes long in any case. So he'll get a little dose of what we do here at Relevant Radio, talking about God and talking about other things that are related to God. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that would help them start listening on their own. And maybe before you know it, they say, Mom, I'm so glad you were sending me that stuff because now I listen every day. And guess what? I'm going back to Mass again because of something I heard on Relevant Radio.
I love that, Patrick. And you never give up hope on your kids, even when all seems lost. Always have hope, always pray for them, and send them a text that just says, I love you.
Yes.
Let them know.
So that's why you send me all those affirming texts all the time, Cyrus. You're so great, Patrick.
You weren't supposed to tell anybody.
I like you. Well, maybe.
I just like, actually, I like my job, so try to keep you happy.
Now I understand. I get it. You know what? We're overdue for a break, so let's do that. Lisa and all the moms and dads out there as we go to the break, please continue to have faith, trust in the Lord, beg for his mercy and kindness to your children who have wandered away from the faith, and trust in his generosity. And I do believe that in the end, all will be well. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thanks again for listening. 888-914-9149. I have a note here that comes in from Maria listening in Los Angeles. She said, you recently mentioned a book about how a father can be more humble and show humility to his kids. The book you mentioned was written in 1953. You stated that you have had this book for years. It was written by a priest. I would love to have this book. Who is the author and where can I publish it? The book is called My Daily Bread, and it's way, 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 way more than just how can you be a more humble parent. I mean, that's part of it. But that's not even really the focus of it. Just how can you be a good follower of Jesus Christ? How can you be a good man or woman in whatever state of life? So the book is called My Daily Bread. It's a classic. You'll love it. And the author is Father Anthony Paoni, P-A-E-O-N-I, S-J, Father Anthony Paoni. And trust me, if you get this book, you start reading it little by little, you will absolutely love it. It's kind of way up there with the Baltimore Catechism, if you ask me. 888-914-9149. How about Marino now in Layton, Utah? Good morning, Marino.
Hello. Hey, Patrick. Hello. I have a question about kind of God's providence and maybe his preordained will. In the Bible, okay. You see sometimes how it seems God leads a man to marry a specific woman. Does God create a specific individual spouse for us nowadays, so is there someone that he preordained that he wants us to marry, or is it more free will in that?
Great question. Well, I think there is some of both. First of all, there is always going to be free will. God does not force you to do anything. He can lead you. And maybe one way to think about that, Marino, is imagine that you are, by way of analogy, a tall masted sailing ship, okay, like the USS Constitution or the Cutty Sark or one of those big three masted sailing ships from the olden days. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So God's providence and his will for you is like the wind. If you rig your sails in faith, so that when God is prepared to move you in some direction, he will do so. So there's a cooperation or a synergy, you might say, between your free will and God's sovereignty, God's desire for you to do his will. He's not going to force you to do his will, but he will help you to do his will. So you're like that tall-masted sailing ship. You're the captain of that ship. Now, if you say, I don't care what God wants, that's like keeping the sails not rigged. In other words, they're not unfurled. They're tightly bound. And so when the wind comes along, that ship's not going to move. But if you are attentive to God's will and you desire to do his will, even though you're not even entirely sure what his will is, when you rig the sails and they're unfurled and they're out there billowing in the wind and can catch the wind, then the wind, God's will move your ship where he wants it to go. Of course, you steer it also, so it's not just God doing that. That's an analogy I think is helpful. So think of it that way. Number one, you always have free will, but God also has a plan for your happiness, and that's called providence. It's always unfolding. Now, where it gets mysterious is where if in your free will, you either frustrate God's plan because you won't cooperate with it, or somebody else frustrates God's plan due to his or her lack of cooperation, there's always plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E, plan F. So God's providence is always unfolding, even in those ways in which maybe what was originally intended for you doesn't happen. God has other things. So the key is to cooperate with his will. And if you're looking for a wife, Lord, I'm trusting in you. I've rigged my sails. I'm waiting for the wind to blow me where you want me to go, and I will seek to do your will. And if you're attentive that way and prayerful that way and trusting in that way, then in due time, I think you can have a great deal of confidence that if you meet the woman of your dreams and she seems to fit all of the parameters of what you're looking for in a wife, you can trust that God has guided you there. And if you start seeing red flags or doors that begin closing, that's usually a sign that this is not what God is wanting you to do. It might look appealing at first, but God will begin closing doors as a way to say, that's not the direction I want you to go in. So it is mysterious, but it's both and. It's your free will and God's providence. And the more you cooperate with his providence, the happier you are. Does that make sense?
God bless you. Yeah, God bless you. Thank you. Good answer.
All righty. Thank you. 888-914-9149. How about Ale in San Diego? Good morning, Ale.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Real quick, I see where you get a lot of people calling in about my daughter, my son that have fallen away from the church.
Mm-hmm. And we do get a lot of those, that's for sure.
Oh, my goodness. And you guys were perfect this morning talking about what we can do. What I've been doing the last couple of years, I've got two teenage grandkids, 18 and 16, busy. They've got each have a phone and everything. So mm-hmm. a couple of years ago, I would take a picture of a scripture and, I would cut it out, not out of the Bible, but I would just make it so I could take a good picture and I would send it to them. And of course, all of us get texts from different people and stuff. Yep. And so I keep them, I don't erase them. And I've been sending it out well over 50 people. And I get a lot of, usually about 8 or 10 people will call and say, thank you. I really appreciate that. But everybody has a phone, and I think it's a terrific way to evangelize. And I just read yesterday, and I was wondering where it was, and that's the reason, main reason I called. In mm-hmm. Isaiah 55, it says, so shall my word that goes forth from my mouth, it shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I intend and prosper in the thing for which I sent it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one way, since everybody has a phone, they're all busy. And to my grandkids, I do send them out 3 or 4 times a week. And but the other people, you know, that I have on my list, you know, twice a week. I just keep it real mellow and stuff like that. I don't want to burden
you don't
people,
want them to block you if it's like too much.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, that in 2 years or so, I've had about 8 or 10 people that have said, please quit sending me that stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course, then I don't send them anymore. But I think it's one way, and you guys were talking about it, you and Cyrus this morning, of what we can do. And and I think that's one way. I've got a printer, and I'm always praying, what can I send out? What can I send out? And it's mm-hmm. really amazing when people call or send me a text saying, you know, Al, I've been struggling, and that scripture you sent was perfect.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's no, I don't know, just a little bit of encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I just want to concur with you. There's no doubt that in God's providence, there are things that to you might seem purely accidental or purely random, but they're intended by God. I mean, we have those things on the program all the time. It's amazing to me, but it's not surprising, even though I am amazed by it. And thanks for the call, Ale. I appreciate it. I never will forget the young woman who called the show. I'm sure you remember her, Cyrus, when she called the show to say that her brother was not badgering her, but, you know, continuously encouraging her to listen to this program because she was living a hedonistic lifestyle. She wasn't going to Mass, wasn't praying, and she had kind of checked out of faith altogether. And she called up, and it was like two layers to the story. The first layer was, well, I finally decided, all right, my brother keeps bugging me about this, so I'll tune in and I'll listen. I think she was from the Ventura area, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe she's listening right now. And she said she just happened to tune in when I was talking about that book, The Dogma of Hell. I've talked about it many times. It's a little book. It'll really get your attention if you're willing to read it, because it tells you what the Bible says, what does Jesus say, and what do some of the church fathers and others have to say about the reality of hell and why you definitely do not want to go there. And it just so happens I was talking about that book. So she tunes in. She hears that, she jumps on her phone, she orders the book. And so then, as she's telling me the story on the air, she gets emotional, starts crying. She says the book completely turned her around 1,000,000%. She read the book, she had a profound reconversion experience. She went to confession, went back to Mass, started praying again, became a devout follower of Jesus Christ one more time, hopefully permanently, I'm sure it will be. And it was all through happenstance, or so it seemed. You know, this so-called coincidence that her brother kept telling her to listen, and she just happened to turn it on for the first time when I just happened to be talking about that book. She just happened to buy it, and she just happened to have this dramatic reversal of course. I mean, those kinds of stories really stick in my mind, not because they're so rare, but because they're so common. We hear them so often. Cyrus, you see the emails too.
Every day. We talked about this earlier this week, where mm-hmm. we'll get emails and the people are like, well, I can't listen all the time. Hopefully you'll respond via email. And we don't, because right. yeah, there's just too many. Right. But you do respond to them on the air. And then they'll write back and they'll say, I got in my car and I turned on the station and you're responding to my email.
We had one yesterday, I think.
Over and over again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see if it works again. I got one right here. Okay. This is from Debbie in Corinth, Maine, okay. And it says, the Lord works in mysterious ways. I think you do the best job of explaining the Catholic faith. She must be talking about you. You always bring...
She might be talking about you. You never know.
You always bring the big guns, backing up what you state, but always in a respectful way. I learn so much every time I listen to your show. So thank you, Debbie.
That is sweet. Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate that. And parents, this is why, and thanks for sharing that, Cyrus, this is why you should never lose hope. Don't ever lose hope. No, I mean, I'm coming back to what the caller said a moment ago about what he does. He sends people by text. He sends them, I don't know, pictures, articles, things like that. I do that with my kids too. Listen to what Jesus said about that. This is Luke chapter 8. Listen to this. And when a great crowd came together and people from town after town came to him, he said in a parable, a sower went out to sow his seed. And as he sowed, some fell along the path and was trodden underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it. And some fell on the rocks, and as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. And some of it fell among thorns, and the thorns grew with it and choked it. And some fell into good soil and grew, and yielded 100-fold. As he said this, he called out, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And when his disciples asked him what this parable meant, he said, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of God, but for others they are in parables, so that seeing they may not see, and hearing they may not understand. Now the parable is this. The seed is the word of God. The ones along the path are those who have heard. Then the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts, that they may not believe and be saved. And the ones on the rock are those who, when they hear the word, receive it with joy. But these have no root. They believe for a while, and in time of temptation, fall away. And as for those that fell among the thorns, they are those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by the cares and riches and pleasures of life, and their fruit does not mature. And as for that in the good soil, they are those who, hearing the word, hold it fast in an honest and good heart and bring forth fruit with patience. So for me, and I hope for you, this parable from Jesus is indicative of the fact that you should be just like that sower of the seed. You moms, you dads, be liberal in your efforts to spread the truth to your children. And just keep doing it. Just keep sending them, text them, give them good books, tell them about Relevant Radio, invite them to Mass. Just keep doing it. And you never know what kind of soil it's going to fall on, but some of it is going to work. So remember that you're not the Lord of the harvest. God is. And it's not your job to make those seeds sprout and grow. That's God's job. But if you're out there distributing this information on a regular basis, continuously, like Johnny Appleseed, Cyrus's hero, if you do that, in due time, good things will happen. But the problem is, and I wonder how often this happens, I think if I had to guess, it probably happens a lot, where parents are afraid to do anything. You're afraid to say something. You're afraid, you're worried that your kids are going to push back. And mama, we're not going to come over for Thanksgiving if you keep talking about God. Okay, try a different technique. Try a different tactic. You can be creative. But don't be afraid to speak the truth in love. And just continuously be like the sower of the seed. And I do believe that if you take those opportunities on a regular basis, you don't have to be, you know, a torrent of constant information, but be regular about it. Little by little, something is going to click. I've seen it happen many times, like that young woman who called from Ventura when her brother was telling her to listen to the show. So give it a shot and maybe spend a little time reading that passage that I just shared with you. It's in Luke chapter 8. And ponder, how is the Lord speaking to you personally in that passage? And what are maybe some things that you could begin to do to cast off your fear and your worry and your anxiety and start doing something proactive in addition to praying to help your kids come back to a practice of the faith? It really does work, believe me. Got to take a break, but I'll be right back with more, including your phone calls. And if you're interested in calling and being on the air, I can get you on the air for the time being anyway, because we have a couple lines open, 888-914-9149. I will be right back.
Hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies.
Our Lord often preached about being good stewards of God's gifts. A legal will guarantees that the important people in your life and everything you've worked for will be taken care of according to your wishes and our Catholic faith. Make your will today using free will. Go to relevantradio.com/freewill to learn more. That's relevantradio.com/freewill. It's absolutely free.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149.
You've got it.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
You like it? You got it. Welcome back. 888-914-9149. How about Emilio now in Phoenix? Good morning, Emilio.
Hey, Patrick. How are you doing?
I am well. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Even though Cyrus says, don't ask me, thank you anyway.
Yeah, sorry. It's kind of just a natural thing.
I get it.
My question was, and me and my mom were talking about it last night, in a situation, for example, with the Nazism, and let's just say in the situation you're hiding Jews, and Nazis come to your door asking if you have any, in that situation, would it be a sin to lie to the Nazis?
I don't think it would, because you're put in an impossible situation. And so let me teach you a new word. I don't know if you're familiar with the word culpability. Do you know what that word means? Culpability?
Can you repeat it again?
Yeah, culpability. Culpability. It comes from the Latin word culpa, C-U-L-P-A, which means fault. So the way I'd explain it, to answer your question, Emilio, is that objectively speaking, you can say this action, objectively speaking, is wrong or it's sinful. But subjectively, like you are the one who's doing the act, it may be that under some circumstances, you would not be culpable for the sin in a formal way because you're experiencing great duress, great fear, for example, or some kind of external coercion that removes your freedom. You can't really freely act as you would if you, let's say, stole something from the store and your mom says, did you steal something from the store? Well, you might fear punishment, but you would have freedom to say, yes, I did steal it. I'm sorry I did that. But in a case like that where other people's lives are depending upon you not letting the Nazis know that they're hiding in the attic, I think your culpability goes way down. And maybe it's even diminished entirely, where you're not in a formal way committing a sin, even though lying itself is a sin. I think that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it would be, do these people have a right to know whether or not you're hiding Jews in the attic? And absolutely they do not, because they want to kill them. So another school of thought is that you're not obligated to tell the truth to every single person because not everybody has the right to know the truth. So if somebody wants to know how much money do you have in your bank account, well, I mean, if it's your mom, she has a right to know. So you would have a duty to tell her. But if somebody else said, you know, some other person, whoever he is, asks you how much money do you have in your bank account, you're not obliged to tell the truth to that person. So you could say nothing, or you could say, oh, I got $1 million in my bank account. That's not true, but it's not really a lie. It's kind of like hyperbole. So the last thing I'll say is, in a case like that, where you have no other option, there's nothing else you can do. You're either going to put these people's lives in danger, or you're going to try to mislead the people who are trying to harm them. And if that's the only choice you have, you go with the lesser of the two evils. And as I say, I think your guilt would be greatly diminished. Can I give you one other analogy? This might help you think about this. I know you weren't alive when 9/11 happened, but you probably have studied it in school, right? The attack on the World Trade Center?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the most terrible things about that whole terrible thing was that when the planes hit the World Trade Center towers, everybody above where those planes hit was doomed because there was no way for them to get down because all the elevators and stairways had been taken out by the planes. And the buildings were on fire. And many people were trapped in those floors above where the planes had hit the buildings. And it's such a terrible thing, but someday you're probably going to see the video of this. There were people in those upper floors, and the windows were blown out, and the rooms that they were in were on fire. And the fire, if they stayed there, they were going to burn up. And so they did the only thing they could do, which is they jumped out the windows. So jumping out of a window, knowing that you're going to die, that, you know, objectively speaking, that's a sin under many circumstances. But in their case, it wasn't a sin. Their culpability was greatly diminished. They had no other choice. That's the only thing they could do. And so they didn't commit a sin by jumping out of the windows. They were trying to escape something worse. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. I think it's great that you and your mom are talking about things like this. You sound like a deep thinker.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to talk today, Emilio. Thank you. Let's go now to Samantha in Los Angeles. Good morning, Samantha.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
My question is about my relationship with my parents.
Okay.
As far as honoring, I feel that our relationship is toxic, and it's become toxic since I've grown away from them or separated from them a little bit, set boundaries, I should say. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm growing as a person, and my relationship with my husband has been better, and my work relationship has been better.
That's good.
But I know that I'm, hurting them in the process. So,
how so?
Where does honoring your, because I'm not as close with them as I used to be, and I know it hurts them, and the less I'm with them, the less I want to be with them.
Yeah.
It's not just me. My other sister is having a hard time with them as well. Mm-hmm. I have one sister who's a little bit more dependent on them, and she still, you know, kind of puts up with them, so to speak. But
yeah,
I don't know where I draw the line. What is honoring your parents? Am I sinning?
I don't think so. No. Because remember that to honor your father and mother, it takes different forms. And sometimes it could be financial. Let's say that your mom and dad are in dire straits. And even if you don't like them, if it's not them gambling the money away or something, they just have a problem that they need help with. That would be an example of honoring your father and mother, to try to help them financially if that's what's necessary. You can only do what you can do, but we have an obligation to do that. To be respectful, to be attentive and grateful too, even though they may be difficult now. Don't forget they changed your diapers and they fed you and they housed you and they took care of you and loved you growing up. So there's a debt of gratitude that we all owe to our parents, even if they're not pleasant people. So my advice would be in this case, Samantha, do the best you can. The fact that you're even experiencing this conflict is a good sign, because it shows, and God sees, that you desire to honor your parents, you desire to follow that commandment, even though you're not exactly sure how to do it. He knows that you want to do it. That's the main thing. It doesn't obligate you. On the other hand, though, you're not obligated to hang out with them. You're not obligated to have emotions. In other words, we can't manufacture emotions to fit what we want to have. You feel the way you feel. And not everybody is going to be your cup of tea. And if it so happens that your parents are just unpleasant people and you don't get along, you're not obligated to you know, dote on them if that's a cause of friction. But I would say to do what you can to make the effort to be respectful, even though they're problematic in some ways, you know, to go beyond that and to show love and kindness. And you don't have to overdo it. You don't have to go overboard. But there is a happy medium there somewhere. And I'm sure you'll find it. And sometimes, here's one final thing, Samantha. Sometimes the act of kindness will cause you pain. It'll cause you some suffering because you don't like it. You don't enjoy it. That's all the more meritorious, it seems to me, that in those ways that you do try to extend that respect and the kindness, even if they're not grateful for it, you become a better person. You become more purified because you're enduring a bit of suffering in order to do something really good in God's eyes. Anyway, sorry, you had something more to say?
Oh, thank you. What if my happy medium isn't there? I just feel that they're never happy with me. That's difficult to live with.
Yeah. Have you ever told them that in so many words?
In so many words, it's difficult to have conversations with them. And I think as they're getting older, they're getting a little bit more indignant and stubborn. Mm-hmm. It's getting more difficult. And I tend to want to pull away more.
I understand. But that happy medium is there. Maybe perhaps a letter, if you wrote a heartfelt letter to them, if it's too difficult to say it verbally because they won't hear it, maybe if you were to express this in a letter: I love you. I'm grateful to you. I really thank God for all the good things you've done, but I find it difficult for these reasons. And I wish we could have a good relationship, but I'm not sure how to do it because I feel like you don't approve of me. And everything I do, you find fault with. I mean, you can be really honest with them. And in a letter, it gives them an opportunity to read it and reread it and think about it in a way that you wouldn't have available if it was a face-to-face conversation. Sometimes letters are better that way.
Okay.
Just a thought.
I thank you for, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Ask God, I'm sure you have, but just as a word of encouragement, ask the Lord to show you what is the path through this difficult situation. And just ask him, Lord, I need a solution here. What is my solution? What should I do? What would you want me to do? Because after all, you gave the commandment to honor your father and mother. So how can I fulfill your commandment, Lord? And he'll show you.
I will, and I haven't done that yet. So thank you for the reminder.
You're most welcome, Samantha. Thank you. And I'm going to pray that you find the happy solution, that happy medium, and maybe call me back down the road and let me know how things turn out. I'll pray for your parents as well. Thank you. Well, we're out of time for this hour, but we're not out of time because we have two more hours on the Patrick Madrid Show. They'll go by quickly, too. So if you want to call, I wouldn't wait too long. 888-914-9149. Plenty ahead, lots to talk about, including a couple of crazy situations with the whole pronoun gender ideology war. Some updates on that I'd like you to know about. We'll get to all those things and your phone calls right after this.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.